Chapter 2. The war has already begun, and we are ethically obligated to fight. I am driven with a mission from God. God would tell me, "George, go and fight these terrorists in Afghanistan," and I did. And then God would tell me, "George, go and end the tyranny in Iraq," and I did. President George W. Bush. Does faith matter? Absolutely. How can you have judgment if you have no faith? How can I trust you with power if you don't pray? The notion that you are endowed by your Creator sets a certain boundary of what we mean by America. Newt Gingrich. Edwin Kagan, my late friend and former legal director of American Atheists, wrote in his book, Baubles of Blasphemy, about what he called the American Religious Civil War. He opined that the religious right has started a war we must fight in order to retain our religious freedom. Edwin was often right, and this case is no exception. We are in a war right now, but like many religious wars, it's really a war against religious leaders and their followers, all of whom are either liars or victims. Not all religious folk are involved, nor do they all support what the religious leaders are doing, leaders being a relative term. Many religious people understand the basics of the separation of religion and government, why that is imperative for freedom to exist, and why the attempt to destroy it is destined to fail in the long term despite short-term successes by the religious right, as in the 2014 midterm election. Such people are typically nice, common, and way too quiet, and brainwashed into being so. Atheists are way too quiet as well. Throughout the country, the vast majority of atheists are either closeted or silent, waiting for this thing, this seemingly inevitable conflict between the followers of Fox News and the haters of Fox News, many of whom also watch Fox News just to have something to hate, to happen around them. However, by remaining on the sidelines, they are helping to extend the war or even lose it. If you're one of those too quiet atheists, I hope this book motivates you to make some noise. Such motivation may come by way of some facts. I like facts. So please consider the following. In November of 2014, the Texas State Board of Education made changes to its curriculum and, in a brazen act of dishonesty, changed its textbooks to include statements that imply Moses, the fictional character from the Bible, was instrumental in the founding of America, influencing the writing of the Constitution and providing the foundation for democracy. These textbooks are used nationwide in public schools, so it's a good possibility that your public school system will soon be teaching our children revisionist, pro-religion lies in an attempt to legitimize religion and Christian privilege on a massive scale. President George W. Bush stopped stem cell research almost entirely by placing heavy restrictions on the use of stem cells until a new, more enlightened president took over and fixed it. Thanks, Obama. This delayed the most promising research on Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease, and many kinds of cancer. In one fell swoop, Bush delayed treatments for these ailments, reducing the life expectancy and quality of life for all Americans, while giving a great competitive opportunity to scientists in other countries to catch up and possibly surpass America in its research, and jeopardizing our patent domination. Why? The Pope said so. Preachers joined in, and so President Bush jumped and obeyed. If you or someone you love has one of those diseases, someone else's religion has reduced their chance of being helped before it's too late. You, as a citizen of the planet, have suffered a Dark Ages-style delay on treatments that may have significantly increased your lifespan and its quality. Nobody called the president on it, and people still think Christianity is pro-life. Abortion, marriage equality, and death with dignity are great examples of issues where religious laws invade our everyday lives. These attacks against our very ownership and authority over our bodies are almost entirely religiously motivated, yet these laws are secular, affecting all of us. Some old man in a collar says his God wants you to obey his laws, and we as a country acquiesce. Theocracy, defined as government ruled by or subject to religious authority. I'm not writing a whole book on this, but I could. There are many more instances in which other people's religions affect your life with the help of our government, all while claiming it's about secular morality. It's not. It's about religion using the force of law to make non-adherents obey its preachers. It's been going on since the Dark Ages globally, and in America since it was founded, and it is the essence of the war we are fighting. Many times, I'm asked why I do what I do with such fervency. Here's why. Because religion invades our lives, our wallets, our schools, and our government. Because we elect leaders who talk to their gods and, as a result of this guidance, enact unjust policies at best and, at worst, send this country to war. Because even though we atheists are more populous in America than Jews, Hindus, Buddhists, and Muslims combined, we have no representation in Congress due to deeply held bigotry, and because this bigotry is promoted by our government via religious politicians. Because every penny we spend lies about us, insulting us. Yes, it is an insult. You bet it's an insult. With the accusation that we believe and, indeed, trust in God. Because our taxes are higher while the churches and synagogues and mosques pay far less than they should, sometimes nothing at all, just because it's always been that way. We, private citizens and small businesses, have to pony up extra to compensate for these institutions, even if these same institutions preach lies and spread false information about us. Because every child of every religious background in every public school in America is reminded every day that their country voluntarily subordinates itself to the same God referenced on the money, and if they don't agree, they are a minority. Every day. And then, religion tells us it's above criticism. It says it's offensive for us to claim our equality. Sure, religion sometimes allows debate within certain limits, but it always demands respect, claiming to deserve respect by default. I do not respect religion. I abhor it. It does nobody any favors to treat the unrespectable with respect. Refusing to respect religion shocks the religious into realizing that serious criticism is allowed and can indeed be beneficial to everyone. Hearing someone call religion a myth, or addressing a preacher by his first name, or asserting that Jesus is an obvious ripoff of earlier gods, may even get some of the flock to think about their religion critically for the first time. We, as atheists, do no good for ourselves or for others by hiding in the closet. I'm reminded of a Muslim friend of mine who once told me he respected my position on religion because it made sense and relied on logic. He admired my leadership and my cause. I thanked him. But then, he asked me to say I respected his religious beliefs in kind, in an obvious attempt to get an "I respect your religion too" statement from his atheist friend. He didn't get what he wanted. I said no. I told him that while I thought he was a nice guy and I respected him as a person, his religious beliefs were ridiculous and I did not respect them. He frowned and walked away. Did I do right? I could easily have said, "Yes, I respect your beliefs," and we could have had a mutual love in, and my friend would have left the conversation happier. But I would have been lying. Worse yet, I would have been hurting him by reinforcing his poison, religion. Even the atheists respect my religion. Even worse yet, I would have done it for selfish reasons, escaping a mildly uncomfortable situation in favor of a happier one, going along to get along. But theists need and deserve conflict. They need to hear that their religion is not equal to atheism. It is far beneath it. They need to hear that they are not their religion, which is the opposite of what so many are taught as a child, and that their religion is crap. Lying to theists about the relevance and legitimacy of their religion does them no favors. It hurts them in subtle but profound ways, and it is our moral obligation not to do it. Firebrand atheism is harder on us and better for them. That's what makes it humanistic. Others might assert that some religious people need their religion, that without the lie of God, some theists would collapse and somehow be unable to function. To this, I have two responses. One, nobody needs religion. We know this because the country has many millions of atheists and we have no need for religion. Atheists are human beings living perfectly fine lives without religion, so there's solid evidence that humanity can survive and thrive without religion. It's fair to say that those who assert that they need religion don't really need it, they just think they need it, or they want to need it, sometimes very badly. Religionists have a perceived need planted there as part of the brainwashing they've received. They need no religion, but they think they do, because religion has convinced them of it. 2. What would you say to your mom if she said she'd collapse and be somehow unable to function if not for her psychic, tarot card reader, or astrologer? Would you take that seriously? If not, why exactly not? Many atheists still place religion on a pedestal by asserting that religion is somehow more important or serves a need greater than other woo. Don't do that. You know religion is equal to other myths and scams, and you'd likely object if mom was being scammed by a psychic, even if she said she needed the psychic. But you're okay with her thinking that she needs religion and pays dearly for it? Big question. Is that a symptom of your own indoctrination? I know this tastes bad. I know it feels religion-y to vocally support or preach atheism. Religion pushes itself for its own good. I'm saying we need to push atheism, to at least some extent, for the good of the theists. They need and deserve our help to be free of the bullshit that clouds their judgment. I'm not saying we need to go knocking on doors, but I am saying that preaching atheism has an unmistakable ethical component that we cannot simply ignore because we don't like how it tastes. In the stereotypical example, if I knocked on my neighbor's door on Sunday morning, got invited in to talk about atheism, and then systematically led that family away from religion, you couldn't deny that good had been done. We need to own that. We need to own that preaching atheism has at least some component of good. We need to admit to ourselves that live and let live might not be a perfect solution, or at least not a perfectly ethical one. Whether it's macro-level activism or one-on-one deconversion, I find it disturbing when people tell me we atheists are acting as if atheism were a religion. Religion preaches, but not all that preaches is religion. Politicians, unions, civil rights advocates, tax reform advocates, pro- and anti-gun rights advocates, and promoters of every kind also preach their agendas with fervency. That person knocking on your door Sunday morning may be a Jehovah's Witness or a Greenpeace volunteer. However, it is unavoidable and perhaps understandable that when we talk about atheists pushing atheism, we get comparisons to religion, a phenomenon that does not occur in any of the other instances where positions are pushed. It's total bullshit. Raising a fist and a voice, taking a firm stance for honesty, and pressing hard for equality is not religion, any more than helping to free somebody from the scam of astrology makes you an astrologer. The difference between what we are pushing and what they are pushing is stark. Everything we say is consistent with everything we know, and everything the theists push goes against everything we know. That's how we know we are right and they are wrong. To attempt to equate the two reveals the pedestal on which religion sits, as this lame excuse for opposing activism only occurs when such activism opposes religion. Nobody ever says, "Gee, you look like a religion when you promote the environment, you shouldn't do that." And what it accomplishes, atheists protecting religion from criticism by telling other atheists not to be active because atheism looks too much like a religion when we do, is exactly what religion wants, because it is only religion that benefits from bullshit like this. Religion does not own activism. If atheists remain passive, religion will win because its members will be the only ones who are active. While demanding respect, religion also demands privilege it does not deserve. Religion has a lot of privilege in America, while ironically claiming to be the victim of persecution. But striving for religious equality is not persecution. It's the American way. Consider the following objectives. An America where the government does not actually help religion or atheism at all. An America where politicians don't preach and neither does the money. An America where doctors and patients make medical decisions all by themselves. A larger tax refund and a smaller national debt because every church pays its fair share in taxes. an America where real scientists practice real science, without regard for the opinions of people who actively want the unknown to remain unknown. History books clear of revisionist history, science books without warning stickers, and all students feel like an equal, no matter what their religious views might be. Loving adults marrying and adopting kids without hardship or hard times because of the sex or gender expression of the people they love. Atheists being elected to office, and theistic politicians courting our vote because we are an accepted, normal part of society. E Pluribus Unum, one nation indivisible, and united we stand. Everyone being equal, really equal, even those who don't believe in gods. That's what the separation of religion and government means, and that is our big picture goal, the removal of unearned, unwarranted, and un-American religious privilege from our society, starting with our government. If religion has its way, we will never have a true separation of religion and government, because in that situation, religion would be relegated to just being religion. The religious would gather, sing, pray, and have all the rights that they should have. However, without the perks and legitimization from the government, religion would dramatically shrink because its message alone is so weak. Religions know this. It's not news. And this is why it would be near suicide for religion to stay out of politics. To abandon politics is to abandon the protectors of its huge tax advantages, so it behooves religion to stay in politics, and it does that by staying influential, pushing theocratic bills, and wielding its flocks to support them and the politicians who work with it. This is why we can't just fight specific issues, legal battle after legal battle. They will never cease, because religion cannot ever cease. For us to protect our own rights as atheists, we must take aim at the source. We must fight religion, and we must win. Now, I'm talking here about fighting religion, not religious people. Remember, our main adversary is not the believers, but the cycle of religious indoctrination that, for lack of a better word, infects them. The believers are mostly very nice people who are just victims of the cold and calculated brainwashing they've received since birth, as my own mother unwittingly and unsuccessfully attempted to do to me. There are two kinds of preachers, victims and liars. The victims have been indoctrinated into religion, and though they may be intelligent, they truly believe the man in the sky personally wants them to preach whatever word they're preaching. I pity the believing preacher, as I pity all believers. The liars aren't really theists at all. They are just atheists, faking their way through their jobs for money or power, the whole point of religion in the first place. Or because they once were victims of the indoctrination and now, after realizing their gods are false, are trapped in a job in which they lie for a living. I pity them more. Many atheists count themselves as believers, attend services, and say the words they know are lies for a variety of reasons, family pressure, societal oppression, politics, etc. They, like their preacher counterparts, are trapped in the church. One wonders how many atheists are preaching religion to atheists. All believers are victims, having been brainwashed during their lifetime via a process perfected over generations into believing things that break all known laws of physics, gods, angels, demons, etc., are real, and that believing without or despite evidence is a virtue, and of course, that some things are better and some things are greater than they appear. The most important lie that religion tells is that there is no such thing as human death. All other animals die, and your body dies, but your soul goes somewhere to live for eternity. Whether it's heaven, hell, or some other place, or reincarnation, religion allows people to escape believing in the one thing we as a species fear most, our own mortality. Religion allows people not to believe in death, literally. It's the world's most powerful empty promise, and a major hurdle to overcome. In fact, research from April of 2015 suggests that atheists remind theists of their own mortality, which leads to negative associations with atheism. The brainwashing is solidified by the promises of what you want most. Most religionists are subjected to brainwashing or indoctrination, same thing, from infancy, as was attempted on me. I was circumcised, branded as a Jew at 8 days old, began Hebrew school in kindergarten and was constantly reminded that the Jewish version of the deity was the one true God. This was my personal religion cycle. Most people born to religionists have similar stories. The gods and teachings may differ, but the indoctrination always starts at an early age, which is why most people stay in the religion into which they were born, without giving any alternatives serious consideration. Nowhere can the effects of large-scale, long-term brainwashing from infancy be more clearly seen than in the fact that most believers believe in the God of their parents. Brainwashing is a broad word, encompassing many methods which can take place at any time in a person's life. Those who find religion as adults are also victims of the lie of God. The reason churches preach to the imprisoned and the downtrodden is because these adults are presumably beaten down with weakened mental resistance to religious infection. Religion is Machiavellian in its methods. The good news is that brainwashing isn't always permanent. It's not always about brainwashing. Some people are just flat-out liars. Sometimes it's easy to spot somebody who lies about his piety. Consider Bill Clinton, who allegedly had many affairs. Every time he committed adultery, he broke one of his religion's major commandments and entered further into a state of sin, according to what he claimed to be his belief. Here's a question. If you believed dying in a state of sin meant you would go to literal hell, and that such death could happen at any time without warning, would you ever have a long-term adulterous affair? Would you ever risk an eternal hell for a blowjob? You'd have to be really stupid to do so, like blazingly stupid. Clinton was a Rhodes Scholar. Maybe you'd screw up a time or three, and that's where grace, confession, and forgiveness come in, as parceled out in the name of God by the preachers before they ask for money. But that requires repentance, and repentance requires you to, well, not have long-term affairs. You're not repenting if you keep sinning. It's plain to me that it never occurred to Clinton that an all-powerful, mind-reading God knew what he was doing when he was playing with cigars in the Oval Office over an extended time. He apparently had no fear of the God to whom he was supposedly praying or of the damnation about which his Bible warned him. Here's another example. Mark Sanford, while the governor of South Carolina, resigned in disgrace as chairman of the Republican Governors Association after being caught lying about his whereabouts while cheating on his wife with a long-term lover. A huge web of lies collapsed on Sanford, who had told everybody he was hiking the Appalachian Trail when he was actually in Argentina with his mistress. So that's lying, coveting, and adultery. All commandments being broken over and over. Do you think he was worried about hell? Sanford then successfully ran for Congress on the God Has Forgiven Me platform. Of course, nothing in the Bible says God gives second chances for such transgressions. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 9, "Or do you not know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived. Neither the sexually immoral, nor the idolaters, nor the adulterers, nor men who practice homosexuality." End quote. But that's not the point. Did God tell him he was forgiven, or did he just make that up? I don't think he was having a long-term affair and flying to Argentina behind a web of long-term lies while believing in eternal damnation for those very actions. In my opinion, he's like Clinton, either stupid, which I don't believe, insane, or lying about his beliefs. It may be distasteful, but we must admit it. These pandering hypocrites in Congress and in churches who talk as if they believe in a God but act as if they don't are probably atheists lying about their beliefs for their personal benefit. In this world, there are good theists and bad theists, and there are good atheists and bad atheists. But some of the worst atheists, the ones who feign piety for personal gain, are running religion and politics. I seethe with hatred for religion, but I hate no human. Hitchens anthropomorphized religion and treated it like a consciousness. Religion poisons everything, as I do in this book, because, as Richard Dawkins taught us, ideas spread from person to person in a fashion that seems deliberate. Memes. So when I use phrases such as religion wants and Islam tries, I'm not referring to people, but to the ideas themselves. Nothing I write in this book should be construed as all religious people are bad or stupid. Religious people are victims of a bad thing and often do bad things because they believe they are being good without seriously pondering their own positions. For instance, let's take the stereotypical Christians who oppose gay adoption. These people will immediately and ardently vote against gay adoption legislation because they believe that's what God wants them to do, as cherry-picked and dictated from their holy books by their preachers. However, take it a level deeper and things change. If you ask them whether, after a tragic accident that killed all the adults in their family, they would want their own children to spend the rest of their childhoods in an orphanage or in a loving, secure gay household, you will be able to watch the turmoil in their eyes. They will readily sentence other people's children to orphanages. But would they sentence their babies to the same fate so they aren't exposed to homosexuality? If they are truthful, they will admit they'd rather have their kids in a stable, loving gay home, yet they oppose gay adoption for other kids. They don't think about the harm this does. They don't think about the whole do unto others as you would have them do unto you thing. They follow their leaders and do wrong in the name of good. They hold back love in the name of love. They hurt children so they don't have to oppose their preachers. It's easy to get mad at these people, but they deserve more pity than anger. There, but for the grace of dumb luck, go us. None of us can be sure how we'd be today had we been born to other parents in another part of the world, subjected to different brainwashing in a different, perhaps more oppressive, religion cycle. I do look like a rabbi with a full beard. Religion is a mental injury, the result of indoctrination, and must be recognized as such, even in the most extreme cases of ISIS or the Southern Baptist Convention. Religious people aren't evil. They are damaged. Like the Borg of Star Trek, religion makes people part of its collective. When we fight religion, we fight against humans who seek to protect and expand the collective because they are victims of said collective. We'd prefer, if possible, to free the victims from their affliction, and as nice people, we want to do so. But failing that, we have to fight against victims. Theists must be fought, even as they are pitied. Understand, religion is weak, not in terms of power in America, but rather in argument. As loud as they shout, as hard as they try, preachers keep bumping into the great wall of logic and knowledge. They are, in all their huffing and crying, talking about an invisible man in the sky, and theirs is no different from any of the others. Yahweh, Allah, Vishnu, Quetzalcoatl, all of them myths. This is religion's Achilles heel. The preachers are hawking mythology, and mythology is weak. That's why they need to indoctrinate. Religion is not learned, it's inflicted. If you're a preacher, you make your living telling lies. I am saying they are telling lies, whether they believe them, victims, or not, liars. I make this statement not to concentrate on the lies themselves, but rather on the making a living aspect of preaching. The stereotypical used car salesmen know they are conning unsuspecting people into buying junk for good, hard-earned cash, but they have to make a living, and they probably didn't end up where they are because they attained their ideal career goal. Somewhere along the line, they found themselves in this job, they have families, and this is what they know. I would hazard a guess that most such people feel guilty for doing their job, yet are trapped into doing so. This is analogous to preachers who become atheists, yet still preach. This is a different kind of victim of religion. Someone stuck in a job telling lies with no way out. Many such preachers went straight to seminary without a decent secular education or even reading their Bible first, only to learn that their Bible is fiction after they became preachers. The more you learn about religion, the more likely it is that you will figure out it's all a scam. Similarly, the more you learn about atheism, the more likely it is you will figure out all religion is a scam, mainly because learning about atheism includes learning about religion. Some are so vested in the community that they would lose their social status, friends, and perhaps even family if they changed career. So, with a heavy heart, these people who only intended to help others but ended up realizing they were doing the opposite are forced to continue lying professionally. This broad scenario is faced by all the preachers of the world. Some wanted to be preachers, while others chose the profession later, but all are making a living and have a self-serving interest protecting their income. Those who are successful may think of their success as a sign from their God that they are doing the right thing, or they might know their job is a total scam, but in either case, they have a monumental self-interest in keeping their job, their lifestyle, and their flock. Then there's that problem of weakness again. How do you protect your livelihood of preaching about a man in the sky in the 21st century when facing a seemingly endless barrage of attacks from science, logic, and perhaps your own conscience? This is where the government comes in. Government has been used for centuries to promote and protect religion. The true root of all evil is power, and both government and religion are effective tools for amassing and maintaining power. When used in conjunction with one another, both religion and government thrive, albeit at the expense of freedom. This is why throughout human history, we can see government and religion working together to subjugate the population, and this is why religion is constantly trying to get itself official legitimization in any way possible. The problem is that America, as everyone should know, is a secular nation, and that means no single religion can attain any status not enjoyed by all the others. This is horrible if you're a preacher, as it hobbles your ability to use the power of government to keep your religion elevated above the rest. Where would Christianity be today if not for the constant droning of one nation under God by every child, or in God we trust on every penny? Without the National Day of Prayer or singing God Bless America on the 4th of July? How would Christianity look to Americans if Christianity had not successfully inserted itself into American society via government intervention? This, again, is pure Christian privilege. We all know that America is supposed to be a free nation of equals, but straight out of Animal Farm, Christians are used to being more equal than others. Every lawsuit we file at American Atheists, every complaint we make, is about Christian or religious privilege, as opposed to Christianity or religion itself. Crosses on public land, school prayer, voucher schemes, fair church taxation, all are battles against inequality, not Christianity. Some religions, Christianity in particular, have witnessing as part of their mission, so Christians feel it's their duty to preach to non-adherents in any way they can. The most obvious example is Christian clubs set up in public schools used to lure other people's children with cookies and pizza so they can be preached to. This is illegal, unless other religious positions are allowed the same opportunity, but Christians do it anyway. Their mission does not give them the right to break the law, nor does it justify special privilege. That they want to break the law and their religion tells them to break the law does not allow them to break the law. Laws that mandate equality, or the judges that enforce the law, aren't anti-religion just because religion craves superiority. If their religion is incompatible with the law, they, not we, have to suck it up and work within the law of the land. Pro-equality laws are only anti-Christian because Christianity is anti-equality, and this is their problem, not ours. When we fight for equality, we become the bad guys in the eyes of those who currently enjoy superiority. In 2013, American Atheists settled yet another Ten Commandments on Public Land lawsuit, this time in Bradford County, Florida. In brief, we won the right to put an atheist-sponsored monument next to the Ten Commandments. I will talk more about the monument in Chapter 8. The Christian monument stood alone, illegally. But when we complained in the name of equality, we were bashing Christianity, holding back their free speech, and persecuting the poor Christian people. Our monument, when installed, was mocking Christianity, aggressive, and right in America's face. These complaints and accusations came from people who did not lose anything from the placement of our monument, except a monopoly position. They complained anyway because this was never about the freedom of Christians to place a monument. It was about inequality in their favor, and they are willing to do whatever they can, including lying about the motives of those championing equality to preserve their superiority. Another example of privilege-influenced behavior is when the attempted removal of under God from the Pledge of Allegiance is called an attempt to make the pledge atheistic. Removing the phrase would not make the pledge atheistic. It would make it religion neutral, secular. Adding the phrase under no God would make it atheistic. It would be the same with money. Removing "In God We Trust" would make it neutral. That's the way it was originally. Yet the idea of removing this phrase was seen as an attack on Christianity when American atheists challenged it in 1978. If atheists actually intended to attack Christianity, we would have demanded our money include the phrase, "In no God we trust." In truth, the real attacks have already been made by Christian politicians against us when they inserted these religious declarations into the lives of all Americans in the 1950s in the first place. We just seek a return to religious neutrality. They attack or break the law. We stop them, and we are considered the bad guys. They dismiss our demand for their adherence to the golden rule, "Do unto others," and ignore that this rule can only lead to the elimination of privilege. If everyone treats others as they would like to be treated, the inevitable result is equality. We, the atheists, by demanding equality and nothing more, are doing unto others as we would have done unto us. The Christian right is not and does not care. Why? Because they are not thinking straight. They are victims of that which poisons good people and makes them hypocritical assholes. So often we hear lame "we are a Christian nation" arguments, but one argument we never hear is probably the best, albeit still inaccurate. The Christian golden rule is imbued in our Constitution in the form of equal rights, because doing unto others as you would have done unto you can only yield equality across the citizenry when applied to a nation. This is an easy one, but we will never hear it from the talking heads, because it means Christian privilege is both un-Christian and un-American, and preachers and talking heads would much rather preserve their privilege. Thank you very much. The other side of Christian privilege, the tax exemption, is even more insidious. All these other efforts, as well as the new efforts to insert mythology into science classes in the guise of intelligent design or revisionist history books, all serve, at least in part, as giant distractions. Religious organizations want us to spend our time and our resources fighting those battles. Don't get me wrong, they want to win, but they really don't want us looking at fair taxation. Why don't churches report their earnings or pay the same taxes as other nonprofit organizations? Why won't any politicians bring this up, even while we as a country suffer through such hard economic times? Fair treatment of churches would mean billions of dollars in tax revenue for the country, but no politician dares suggest it. This is partly our fault, because we are not screaming about it. Even today, facing record deficits, crumbling economies, and defaulting local governments, few are suggesting that churches step up, either by paying their taxes or providing real community service. I'll get into all this later, but I wanted to show you the larger picture. Religion is too weak in premise to live and thrive without government intervention, so it has entwined itself in government, engaging in a constant barrage of offensive moves as a defensive strategy to protect its already ill-gotten gains, tax breaks without oversight, from the wallets of the American public. Then, religion uses the legitimacy it gains from the government to preach to the flock with authority about these secondary issues. Religious leaders go on about such things as abortion and stem cell research, not because of such requirements in the Bible, how could they be, but because they want to mobilize their forces to fight the secondary battles, partly as an offensive move to gain power over the masses and to enforce theocratic rules, partly to stay politically engaged, but also as a distraction from their primary concern, keeping more of their money without oversight of any kind. Religious leaders talk about God's wishes, which they apparently know far better than those followers who don't read their Bibles. By placing their own words in the mouths of their God, they can justify urging people to harm themselves, give to the church, even if it is beyond your means, and their society, support politicians who support tax breaks for the church, for the benefit of the preachers and their religions. The greatest enemy of religious tyranny is the separation of religion and government. Find the politicians who are endorsed or advanced by preachers, and you'll see a politician using religion for political advantage, a.k.a. the "vote for me because God is on my side" ploy. Some are guiltier than others, but unfortunately most politicians from both parties fall somewhere along this scale. The preachers bring the votes in exchange for this legitimacy, and the politician will support the religion's privileges. Hence, there are no attempts to tax the church fairly from Washington, D.C. Separation of religion and government protects everybody equally and is indeed a synonym for freedom of religion and religion equality. The more religion and government are merged, the less freedom of religion is enjoyed by the citizenry. If the government favors one religion over others, or religion over atheism, people have fewer choices in their everyday lives, even for those members of the preferred religion. In such a situation, where people are members of the ruling religion in a theocracy, consider what happens when they doubt or contradict the word of whatever preacher is in power. Suddenly, the individual who was once in the majority is now in the minority, and the government has the opposing preacher's back. Where is the freedom there? Any deviation from the official preacher's word in a theocratic regime places the individual immediately in the second class. With just a little thought, you can see how even the most ardent believer in the majority official religion can, and will, lose freedom in a theocracy. This is why preachers and politicians don't talk about benefiting the flock and instead talk about God's will and pretend that it benefits the flock. Theocracy is relative, and therefore every step away from the total separation of religion and government is a step toward theocracy and away from religious freedom. Atheism is perfect. Yes, I know every religion says the same thing about itself, but religions are wrong. Yes, I know they all say that about atheism too. What I mean by this is that atheism is so simple that it cannot have any flaws. It is simply a lack of belief in gods. So unless there is a reason to believe in gods, it is a logically perfect position. Once a single piece of scientifically valid evidence for the existence of any deity is unearthed, this will change, and atheism, being the single condition of the absence of a belief in God, will have a flaw. But as this has never happened, I'm not nervous. Everything that happens within a universe is completely bound by the laws of that universe, a perfectly logical conclusion based on all the facts currently available to humanity. Now granted, we don't know everything, so atheism provides I don't know as a truthful, logical, and meaningful answer to those questions that are still unanswerable by fact-based evidence. Saying I don't know is not a flaw. It is a true and valid statement that does not take the totally illogical leap of I don't know, therefore a God did it. It communicates the simple and reasonable proposition that we need to learn more. Atheism cannot and does not involve illogical leaps, and it has no exceptions. There is no problem of evil, the question of how to reconcile the existence of evil with that of a deity who is omnipotent, omniscient, and omnibenevolent, which I and many others consider a logical disproof of Christianity. No circular reasoning, no mysterious ways, no you have to have faith, and no self-hypnosis by a repetition of mantras, prayer. Nobody is ever told, if you don't understand Dawkins, repeat this phrase 5 times. We tell you to look it up and ask questions and be prepared for some I don't knows, because saying so is part of telling the truth. In the history of mankind, atheism has never had a single moment of failure. Never, not even once, has atheism been proven wrong, and once is all we'd need to drop it completely. If atheism had been proven wrong, if one God had been verified, if one supernatural event had been measured, if one ocean had really parted, or if one person ever really rose from the grave, I would quit my job, because I'd be wrong. Now compare this to the perfect word of the supposedly immortal superbeing in the sky, who says in Genesis 1 that earth came before light. In the beginning, God created heaven and earth. The darkness was upon the face of the deep, and God said, "Let there be light." Wrong. Earth is composed partially of carbon atoms that were formed inside other suns, and suns give off light. So earth came after the first generation of light-emitting stars. Therefore, Genesis 1 is provably wrong. I'll get into religion's inability to admit it's wrong later on. Despite glaring flaws, many Christians and Jews still call their book perfect because they have been brainwashed to overlook glaring inconsistencies. Atheists seek truth. Theists ignore it. Have I been brainwashed? According to neuroscientist and author Sam Harris in his book Free Will, we are all essentially brainwashed by our surroundings and our upbringing. so I have to take this question seriously. We all should. For many years, I certainly was brainwashed into believing Judaism was more than a religion. But the extent to which Harris goes with this argument, saying that we may indeed have no free will at all, makes me uncomfortable. My discomfort doesn't automatically make Harris wrong. It only encourages me to learn more and eventually come to an informed conclusion. I may conclude the whole thing I don't want to be true is actually true, and as a skeptic, I need to be open to this possibility. As to my being brainwashed into atheism, I've read the books from the other religious side, done my studying, and even given my daughter a King James Bible and told her to read it. She has, and it comforts me that she has. I would love to be proven wrong. As I mentioned earlier, I want, as much as any theist, to be immortal. I want my daughter to live forever, and I want to see my parents in a beautiful, happy heaven after I die. I wish there were some reason to believe it is true, but there isn't. When someone shows me real evidence, I will gleefully join whatever the true religion is. But in all of human history, this has never happened, because it's all a farce. Prove me wrong, even once, and I'll convert. Now, does that sound brainwashed? No one is ever going to convince me that the Word of God is not true. Ken Ham, president of Answers in Genesis and Young Earth Creationist. We would need just one piece of evidence, and you would change me immediately. Bill Nye, the Science Guy. If this war is to be won, it must be fought on many battlegrounds all at once. It is not enough, nor will it ever be, to take a singular approach. Some atheists who choose to fight believe quite adamantly that the way to win the war against bigotry toward atheists is to be outwardly nice to theists and never ruffle their feathers. They want to help theists understand the atheist point of view, hoping to recruit the more moderate among them as allies against those who would rather live in a theocracy. Others, such as me, choose to fight with words, raising awareness of our movement while attacking the assumption of respect behind which religion hides. Still others take a separate but equal approach, insisting that simply living their lives as open atheists in society will allow them to lead by example. They are all correct. All battles must be fought simultaneously for us to succeed, and this means we have to understand and appreciate the breadth of the movement. Even though atheists are numerous in this country, few are active in the National Organized Atheist Movement, which consists of about 10 large organizations across several movement segments and hundreds of smaller regional, specialty, or local groups. American Atheists, the hardcore Marines of the movement, has over 160 affiliates nationwide. In other words, we are spread thin as a movement, and some segments are poorly represented, even though each segment is necessary for our ultimate success. Every segment serves as a magnet for atheists who agree with that segment, which will therefore lead to movement growth. Those who join us will be as diverse as the movement itself, ranging from the softest diplomat to the most fervent firebrand. They all must have a place to go. Touchy-feely atheists who come to American Atheists will most likely not stay long, and they might leave the movement as a whole if they believe we're the only option. However, if those same atheists find like-minded friends over at the American Humanist Association, AHA, or the Center for Inquiry, CFI, they might stay longer, maybe even permanently. The opposite is also obviously true, as firebrands like me would likely encounter resistance and frustration with the diplomat wing. All kinds of atheists help the movement and are vital to its success. We cannot and must not waste any time trying to trip each other up. Yes, criticism is valid, but it must end there, and it must have the primary purpose of advertising the differences between the segments, not to try to change the other segments. Such efforts would likely fail. This way, our internal criticisms will be used as a building tool for the movement as a whole and not generate infighting. The world has been in a constant religious civil war since humanity invented religion, and the United States is only one of many battlegrounds. We must keep in mind that our war is global, and that even when we win the battle in America, which we will still be under attack from other countries. This war will not end in our lifetime, but I am confident that the battle for America will essentially be won before 2020 if we work together. I'll get to that soon. We fight a defensive war against an intruder into our lives. If there were no intrusion, if there were no clear intent from religion to spread into and dominate our lives, then we would have no fight and I would have no passion. We fight for equality for everyone and freedom for all, even for those who disagree with us. That's what makes us the good guys.